I'm Casper Dogovins, Dogman, and listening to Six Sessions Podcast.
Welcome back to another edition of the Sixth Sense Podcast. It's been a lengthy absence for us over at the CKCU studios. We haven't done one since, I believe, September. Tim's moved to Toronto. Creech is here today to help me out. Welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
Pumped. Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me out.
So a lot has happened over the course of the past 2.5 months. Where do you want to start?
I guess we'll start with the Sense. Is that...
Did you want to just jump right into Filatov?
We've been talking about it lots off air, at work. I think it seems fitting.
Yeah, all right. So, obviously, Filatov hasn't played since, I believe, Dallas. Is that right?
I think it was the Dallas game.
Yeah, so
he looked okay.
He looked okay. He had that... He deked around the defender, went behind the net, and then Raycroft made a nice save. Nice little toe save on him at the far post. But he's had trouble putting up points consistently at the NHL level over the course of his career. We can debate whether or not he's warranted the amount of top six ice time that people want to see him receive. Bobby Butler hasn't produced of late since that Calgary game where he had two goals.
One game, right? The
yeah.
Calgary game, two goals.
And I don't think he's scored since, and I think he might have one or two assists. But he's consistently...
I think he has 6 points. I think he's 2-4.
Yeah. But there was a stretch where he put up like 5 points in six games or something.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. And he's kind of been given this opportunity on Jason Spezza's right wing to play consistently. He hasn't been producing. Paul McLean says he likes his play away from the puck. Fans are kind of like, all right, Filatov hasn't really produced at this level. Bobby Butler hasn't. Colin Greening's kind of, his production's gone by the wayside in the month of November. When is Nikita Filatov going to be given a legitimate opportunity to play top 6 minutes and not have to worry about every mistake that he's making on the ice?
What's he played, 2 games in a row twice?
I believe so, yeah. Well, there was a game where he played, I think, 12 minutes with Spezza on the first line, and then there was the Winnipeg game where he got hit in the face and he was gone after like four minutes, and then he played the next game in Dallas and played 14 minutes, didn't put up a point. But, yeah, what's your assessment of this whole situation?
I don't think he's really warranted much to be like given a chance, a legit top chance in the top six forward position, but what's Butler doing? How is Butler not in the press box right now? He's done nothing for me other than that Calgary game. Every game that he's seen, the last 4 games especially, I'm not sure how he's still playing. Even if you're going to take him out of the lineup for last night, put Konopkin, get some more jam. I don't know. I don't know how Butler's still continuing to get this chance, whereas they could easily put Nikita Filatov in. What are they, 1-3-2 in their last 6 games?
Do you think it's a situation where we're kind of jumping to conclusions? Like a lot of people will mislabel him as a malcontent based off his reputation from Columbus, and now obviously he's been in Ottawa for a number of games now and he hasn't been able to get into the lineup. Opportunity seems like it's there, but they're not giving it to him. So do you think it's
something happening that we're not seeing?
Well, I don't want to go that way because it's kind of unfair to the player, but there's got to be something going on, right? There has to be something. Because the team's not playing well. I think they're 1-3-2 in their last 6 games. So it's not like the team's playing well.
And that one was against Tampa?
Yeah.
Trailing going into the third?
Exactly. They were losing 2-1 heading into the third period. And this is a team that's just not playing well. The top six forwards who are playing with Jason Spezza aren't necessarily playing their best hockey right now. It seems like the perfect opportunity to get this kid in and give him an extended look so we can say once and for all, definitively, yeah, this kid sucks. Get him out of town. We don't need him. We'll go with what we have.
Third-round draft pick, whatever.
Yeah. But by the same token, I guess Ottawa is technically in the hunt for a playoff spot. Do you think that Paul McLean says, all right, these guys give me my best opportunity to win on a nightly basis. I'm going with these guys.
How are they not giving him a chance, though?
Well, that's the thing. Like the Brian Murray discussion before the season was, yeah, this whole season's about development. We know the expectations aren't that great. We want to develop players, but we're not seeing that happen with Nikita Filatov.
It's not like they're sitting in eighth and Butler's putting up a point every game or so. He's been garbage. Even Greening, who I like, I wouldn't take him out of the lineup because you could put him anywhere in the lineup. He does other things, bangs and crashes. You can put him out there in the fourth line or the first or second line. But I don't see how Butler's not taking a seat in the press box and giving Nikita Filatov a little bit more of a chance. Like The guys had no chance.
Well, okay. How big of a sample size of games would you need before you can just officially write him off?
I'd give him 5-10 games max. Every night in the lineup. Maybe not every night in the top six role, but keep him in the lineup. Give him a chance. That's what's happening with Butler.
Yeah. And even when he is in the lineup, he's not getting significant power play time for a power play that's kind of gone by the wayside in the last, I don't know, 50, 60 power play opportunities.
I don't remember who is on the... He was on the second unit in Dallas, and I don't remember who he was with, but I want to see something like Neal and...
Foligno, probably.
Foligno, something like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting time to be a Sens fan. Lots of head scratching. Obviously, you don't want to second guess everything that the coach is doing as well, because Paul McLean's done... I think we can all agree that he's done a relatively good job
with
the group that we have right now.
Great interview, too. Every time he opens his mouth, like every time I watch or listen to an interview with him, I love everything he says.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. I don't understand why Filatov's not getting a bit of a chance.
Well, you'd hate to see Filatov go somewhere else and kind of have like a Brian Elliott resurgence. The phenom,
is that
Brian
a segue?
Elliott. Oh, man. The guy's on fire. Another shutout last night. When is it going to end?
Leading the league in goals against average save percentage. By a long shot. 145 goals against average. Next closest is Jimmy Howard at .185.
I think he leads the league in rejected Bruce Garriott interviews, too.
He's unreal. But it's I got to give him credit, but that system's going to help, too. That's, I was saying to you on the walk-in, that system, Ken Hitchcock's going to turn Halak into...
Oh, it'll flatter you. But like, he's not even getting in anymore. It's the Brian Elliott show in St. Louis. Yeah.
He looked so bad last year. Although he didn't have much chance in either city he was in, but...
Oh, the way that team was playing in front, it would have destroyed anyone's confidence.
Oh, like, for sure.
It was just awful.
That's what I believe his agent's quoted as saying something where, yeah, he had an awful year, you know, he has to be better, but as soon as he gets confidence, he's going to be Brian Elliott again.
And Corey Clouston instills confidence whenever he speaks about him in the pregame meetings.
Reminds me of Torts doing the 25% rule against the Sens.
Okay, moving on. Mick Foligno's play of late.
I like him.
Are you buying what he's doing right now on the second line?
I have to right now. I was so hard on that guy at the beginning of the year. I've always liked Nick Foligno, but if he realizes, and the fans and the coaching staff, that he's a third line guy, that's when I would love Nick Foligno. But what does he have, 19, 20 points this year?
Oh, it's silly.
And he's...
Yeah. At least 10 goals. I think you're right. I think he has about like 7 or 9 assists. And
he's got at least 18, 19, 20 points.
Yeah.
And he's...
he's know what he is, though? He is the right guy at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And
playing with McCulloch and Alfredson. Oh,
like, I bet you the combined distance on his goals is like 10 feet. Everything is like right on the goal line.
He's doing other things, too. Like, he's hitting people.
Oh, he's creaming people. Yeah, absolutely. Last night, for example.
What'd you think of those hits?
Oh, clean. I love them.
Both?
Well, Kessler was falling on the second one, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I like the Cody Hodgson one.
Yeah, no, that was clean. The kid had his head down. He was skating towards the middle. Yeah, and he's trying to come off the boards towards the middle of the ice. Yeah, nobody's going to be there.
For sure.
Come out of there with your head down.
The Kessler, I didn't see on TV. I saw, like, I was at the game, so I was watching it from upstairs. It looked like Kessler kind of went down to one knee.
Yeah, he went down to one knee.
Do you think Foligno had time to react?
No, but he let up a little bit. You can see it. And then after he hit him, he stayed with him for a second. And he still had his hands just to make sure he's okay. It happens. It was just one of those unfortunate circumstances where it's just a timing issue.
Won't be hearing from the league?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No,
I don't think so. What about Neil? Do you think he'll be hearing from the league?
Oh, yeah. That was a bit weird.
That got called a slash, and right away I was like, he didn't slash him. That was a spear.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean,
you got
look at what happened with Ovechkin, though. I was joking with a couple guys last night around the television where we were watching the game. And as soon as he speared him, I'm like, well, if the Vancouver guy dove and sold it, you know. Poor Neil. Can't catch a break, that
poor
guy.
Poor Neiler. He was on fire. He came out banging and crashing big time.
Yeah, he had 7 hits last night. Just all over the place.
Bet you had 3 or 4 in one shift where he was hitting everybody.
Well, he's been playing those fourth line minutes. He's got to earn his ice time. Get back into the lineup slowly.
Bobby Butler on the fourth line.
The lines were juggled like crazy last night. We were talking about this on the way into the show.
That's right. We were both talking about how we weren't impressed with Spezza's game lately. But how many different guys did he play with last night? How many different line combinations?
According to the website, leftwinglock.com, this is the line that he had the most ice time with last night. It was McCulloch and Dogovans at 11% of his even strength time. was with those two. And then shortly there, or not that much less than 11%, he was with Bobby Butler in Milan. And then he went to Foligno and McCulloch at 2%. And then he was at Neil and Dogovins and Condra and Bobby Butler.
That's so five line. Different combos.
Yeah. All even strength, right?
How are you supposed to get going?
Well, he hasn't scored since November 29th. I think that's kind of around the time when they started experimenting with Bobby Butler on the top line and his production. It's affected Jason Spezza's production, sadly. And, yeah, you'd like to see him get going. Obviously, McCulloch's still producing on the second line.
I'd like to see Regan stay healthy. Regan, Alfie, and Foligno on the second line. McCulloch, keep McCulloch with Spezza and then whoever else you want to throw in there. Foligno or Filtov.
Oh, I think Filatov's done.
I think so, too.
I think that kid's
they
done.
They haven't sent him
unfortunately.
Down
yet. No, which is even more odd, considering the amount
I'd assume that, reading into it, if they send him down, he's going to go back. I'm assuming that's why they haven't done that yet.
Well, contractually, I think he has to, which is the hilarious part. Maybe
no,
Murray
I mean, try
him.
To go back.
Oh, well, I think he's toast regardless. They have to honor his NHL contract, right? Oh. Maybe he'll Radulov it. Who knows?
After last night's game, that was a bad game. Is that a bad game to watch on TV?
Other
than the first period. First period was exciting.
Anderson kept them in it for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find
after the first period,
through.
It was just... Yeah, no, it was all... The second period was horrendous to watch.
Second period, I think Vancouver blocked six shots.
Yeah. It looked like Vancouver took the foot off the gas pedal a little bit in the third. I was expecting, like, based off what had been happening in the first and second periods, like, I thought it maybe if Vancouver chips in a goal or two in the third, like, that game could get really ugly. But it just never
it
happened.
It was ugly to watch. It was only 4... What was it? 4-1 final?
Yep. 4-1 final.
4-1. It felt like worse than that.
But it was chippy. And I was expecting that, like...
Yeah.
The testosterone to win out and something bad to happen. But, yeah. This is the way it worked out.
I guess can't get that ugly if Vancouver has a bunch of guys that don't like to fight back. They like to do the dirty chippy stuff, but never fight back.
Vancouver is perhaps the most loathsome team in the NHL.
I didn't buy that last year in the finals. I thought the media and fans were being too hard on them, but after watching what have they played twice in the last, what, 3-4 weeks?
Yeah.
And I could see why everyone hates them. Mark Recchi's comments and everything.
Oh, they're douchebags.
They have, we were talking earlier, I want to say 5-6 players that are just pieces of shit to play against, and some of them don't back it up. LaPierre, for an example. That guy's not going to fight anybody unless it's Spezza or something.
Burrows, same thing. Grabs Neil off the bench. In that Sedin scrum, after Neil gets hooked down by Sedin, there's no call. They skate by the bench. Neil pushes Sedin. Burrows grabs him. Grabs Neil's like right arm off the bench. Neil wasn't doing anything until Burrows grabbed his arm, and Neil assumed it was Sedin, and then he starts getting in it with Sedin. And if you watch the replay, Kessler knocks Burrows' arm away from Neil. Hilarious. It's a hilarious little exchange
really?
From last night.
Like
oh,
on
yeah.
the bench?
Yeah. Burrows grabbed him off the bench. Neil.
Yeah, but Kessler.
Yeah, Kessler's sitting beside Burrows on the bench and knocks Burrows' arm down.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm kind of impressed by that because he was another player that was on my list of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Kessler's not a guy I particularly enjoy either. I put perhaps like Mason Raymond on that. LaPierre.
Do you think
Burrows.
Hansen was assigned to
Yannick Hansen.
Agitate Alfredsson last night?
Maybe.
Every time they were on the ice together, I saw little cross checks, little spears. Kessler hit Alfredsson off
there was
an offside call.
Yeah, there was an interesting thing. You know when Kessler hit Alfie late?
Yeah.
And then that next shift, Alfie went into the corner, paced the guy. Wasn't even looking to play the puck. He just wanted to like
how often you see Alfredsson come in from the blue line and throw a hit in the corner?
That was the one moment in the period where I'm like, oh, maybe this will spark the team. Yeah, it never happened. Never happened. Anyways, moving on. Peter Regan. Matt Carkner, they came back last night. What'd you think?
As you said earlier, first game's back. Didn't really notice Carkner too much. As for Regan, I didn't notice him too much either. I did notice he got a pass up from somebody. He was in a foot race coming into the Vancouver zone, and he made a nice pass, I think, back to Alfredsson.
Yeah.
Alfredsson took a shot
and
Longo made a nice save. I like that pass, that play by Regan. He realized he wasn't going to beat his D to the outside. Dropped it back for Alfie. Other than that, didn't notice him too much. Obviously, wasn't taking faceoffs.
He's healthy. He came out of it unscathed. So that's always a plus, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like to see him get going. He looked good at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, no, he was sharp. 3 points in 5 games. Looked okay, and now he's got like the Martin Havlad shoulder problems where anytime that guy gets hit, you're kind of like...
I was scared actually watching him. Every time he'd kind of get rubbed out or you'd see him come up the boards on the breakout. It's like, oh, no.
Oh, same thing happened last night where Alfredson gets cross-checked in his right arm. And his right arm just goes limp.
Yeah.
His arm just went limp. I'm like, oh, God, please not be a separated shoulder.
Oh, God. That's what I thought, too.
But stayed on the bench, came back out.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about the D at all?
The D? I think they need some help.
What about the importance of Filip Kuba? The team's now 1-3-2 after Filip Kuba's been hurt.
When were you seeing your last podcast, Wes?
Oh, September.
September. Were you saying the importance of Filip Kuba back then?
Oh, Filip Kuba was like one of those guys who we just said before the start of the season. If everything goes well, hopefully that guy will be able to salvage some kind of trade value. And no, to his credit, he's playing 2 minutes on the team, playing alongside Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson's game in the last like 3 games has kind of been off. So I'm wondering how much of that might have to do with Kuba.
Probably. They played together
nothing.
For 3 years.
probably nothing. but like you said, this is a guy who he's played with for at least 2.5 seasons, close to 3 seasons. And there's a level of comfort that obviously comes from playing together so often. And now, well, thankfully, the Chris Phillips experiment with Karlsson on the top pairing is over. And now he's playing significant minutes with Jared Cowan. But I think Cowan's been a guy who's really impressed me of late.
He's going to be one of my favorite ends for sure.
And
he looks good.
I'm still a little bit concerned with the way that Runeblad plays right now.
You mean trying to kick the puck in from the blue line?
Yeah.
Keep it in with his feet?
But like the loss of Gonchar, for example, you're counting on this guy to help you move the puck, help that transition game kickstart it.
They missed Gonchar big time on the power play.
Yeah, and it's the loss of those two veteran defensemen. I know those are the guys that you need to trade this year because I think you're still rebuilding, even though the team is in a position where they're close to a playoff spot. But I think considering the way that those two have played, their trade value is never going to be higher. At some point, you're going to have to deal them anyway. So I think you might have to take a lump here at some point if you deal them, because I don't think they have the in-house assets right now to replace their minutes.
No, they don't. And that's why you can be tough on the Runeblads and the Karlssons right now, but they're young guys. There's basically no veteran presence back there other than Phillips.
Yeah, you have a 21.
You want to count
Karkner you have a 21-year-old and 2 20-year-olds who are your biggest minute loggers back there, and it's crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy to think of like how this team was like 2 seasons ago to where it is now, and you're like, it's unfathomable. Just how this roster has changed.
Future looks bright, though.
Yeah, no, it looks good. It looks good.
On the back end.
And Borowiecki's back in the minors. Well, hopefully Patrick Wierkacz returns to health shortly.
You want to talk about that at all?
What needs to be said other than hopefully he gets healthy soon? Like, that was awful to watch.
Didn't see it. I read...
Yeah, it's on the website.
Read your blog. I saw the video clip, but...
You abstained from
watch
watching?
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
I seen who was the ex-N in Montreal a few years back.
Oh, Trent McCleary, former senator.
Yeah.
Yeah, like as soon as I saw on Twitter that it happened, God, please not a tracheotomy. You have to hope for the best. And it seems like he's going to be fine. They're reporting that he's resting comfortably in his hospital bed, so that's good.
I'll get well soon, Patrick Wierkacz.
Yeah, exactly. And they're losing bodies like crazy there. So hopefully, I wonder if Nicky Filatov will make his way down there and help them out a little bit.
What's he, 12 points, 15 games, or something like that?
Yeah.
Plus 3?
Phenom. AHL phenom, Nikita Filatov.
Oh, poor guy.
So, lots of other crazy topics of discussion going around the NHL these days. Realignment being one. Matt Barnaby's DUI being another.
Man. What's he driving on, 3 wheels?
3 wheels. It's poor Porsche.
Probably get you pulled over, eh? What's wrong with this picture? One of these things doesn't belong.
When do you think he'll get around to updating that Twitter status? Or his Twitter
still
handle?
Still say ESPN.
Matt Barnaby,
Barnaby
ESPN.
Something.
Matt Barnaby, DUI.
They were quick to release that. He was no longer with them.
Oh, well, he had that issue last season as well, where there was the issue of potential spousal abuse. So, yeah, he's a troubled ex-player. Surprise, surprise.
What was his role in the NHL?
So, anything else you want to hit on?
What do you think? Do you want to talk about realignment?
Yeah, sure.
What are your thoughts?
Sitting in a conference with every team that we have now, plus Florida and Tampa, it doesn't really scare me at all. It's not like the organization has to go through Sidney Crosby every year to get to the
divisional
final.
Or conference. That's one of the things I don't like. Don't like that they're calling them conferences.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll get tweaked, you'd hope.
Yeah. I like that. I hope they don't touch the playoff format where as far as you need 16 wins. I want 16 wins.
Yeah.
I don't want the best of 3 to get in or...
The one thing that kind of hasn't been talked about at all that I'd love to get your feedback on is if you're possibly playing Montreal-Toronto every year, how the hell are you going to keep those people out of the Scotiabank Place?
That was my first reaction is, okay, so every year that if we make the playoffs, it's probably going to be a Montreal-Buffalo-Toronto. Be a great first-round series for the fans and lots of excitement in the building, but that's tough. That's tough. It'll create some rivalries for sure, but how are these kids in Ottawa going to grow up Sens fans if the Leafs keep beating them in the playoffs?
Don't say that. Leafs fans. Don't say that.
Nah, they'll be fine. The one thing that they get one win under their belt.
The one thing that I do like, though, that hasn't been talked about either, is perhaps the exception of a Toronto or a Montreal, who in recent seasons have made some signings, free agent signings, like, well, actually Boston, sorry. With the exception of Boston, I think every other team in that division has a hard time attracting good free agents to their teams. And you look at Buffalo, it's just...
Except for Florida, what do they have, 13?
Yeah. they threw an exorbitant amount of money at players just to bring up the salary cap floor, right?
Division leader Florida Panthers.
Yeah, but no, from that standpoint, there's not really a team out of that group that really scares the crap out of me, at least yet. I know Florida's got a fantastic farm system, the number of good prospects we were supposed to be on their way.
As far as scaring me division-wise, I think the two other teams from the Southeast that joined, I think the Sens lucked out there for sure. Obviously, it's going to be tough playing Montreal, Toronto, Buffalo, Boston every year.
But you look at the way that those teams are run. It's not like you're dealing with perhaps one of the most well-run...
Philadelphia, New York,
yeah, you're not,
Pittsburgh, Washington,
yeah, like
Carolina.
Shirelli's done a decent job, I suppose, in Boston. None of their GMs or off-ice management guys really scare the crap out of me. I know a lot of people will fluff Steve Yzerman's. Yeah, look where that team is this year.
Yeah. They got a 42-year-old goalie. Is that how old? Yep. Goalie is 42.
Not a lot of payroll flexibility once you give Stamkos. Like, it's $7 million, though, right?
Well, they have Vincent LeCavalier, their second-line center's locked up forever.
Yep.
They should have made that trade with Montreal before the ownership changed. I don't know how they didn't make that trade.
What was the deal?
Not really sure, but it doesn't matter.
Just get him out of here.
If there's a trade on the table, get rid of that contract.
Get it over with.
He's off.
What else do you need? Done.
I don't know what to say. Like,
yeah.
No. Doesn't matter what they got back. And I guarantee there's like a prospect in there.
Well, you hope so.
Maybe some contract, but it's not going to be as bad as his.
Yeah, Montreal is a thing for acquiring veteran past their prime players who were really good in like 2004.
Oh, and he's a Frenchman. They would have loved it.
Yeah.
For now.
World Junior team was announced. We'll have a chance to talk to Nate Sager from Yahoo Sports. Is
pumped.
Buzzing the net. Blog.
Pumped to get his thoughts on that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Nate's usually really outspoken about the way that the team has been selected in the past. Last year, I know he was really pissed off that Tyler Toffoli was excluded from the camp last year. Didn't make the cut.
Not sure how he wasn't at least invited to the camp last year. This year, I think it's going to be tough to hold down roster spot. But we'll get his thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So how about we go take a break? We'll go grab a drink, and then we'll return
Done.
With Nate Sager on the phone.
Pumped.
All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, Sens fans, we're joined on the line by Yahoo Sports' Buzzing the Net, Nate Sager.
Hey, Grim.
Welcome to the show.
Great to have me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Short notice, and you pulled through. Awesome. Thank you.
Hey, no problem.
So?
I got to be good for something once in a while.
You're too hard on yourself. So, Team Canada, World Juniors rosters have been announced. How about your first impressions?
Well, first impression of the camp roster, I think this is going to be a team that, well, I guess they won't be playing... You know, they'll have the ability to rise above playing, quote-unquote, Dave Cameron hockey. They're going to be a little bit more offensive last year. I mean, you've got, I think, four forwards who've played in the NHL potentially on this team. And then you've got, if Jonathan Huberdeau can get back to 100%, and then, you've got someone like Ryan Strome. I mean, those guys are both top five picks in the NHL. Your Senators prospect, Mark Stone, who's leading the Western League in points, at this writing, and a lot of other, I think, some talented guys in that, I guess, age 18 cohort, you know, people like Ty Ratty are going to be pushing for spots. Going to be a bit of a different look on defense, I guess, because the entire defense corps from last year is not back, with Erik Gudbranson making the NHL. And then goaltending, you've got to figure out which of the four 19-year-old goalies is the best, because really no one's established of himself as the clear-cut favorite, although I have a gut feeling. I think Tyler Bunns, the Edmonton Oilers prospect, who's from the Edmonton area and plays in Medicine Hat, might be end up being the guy.
That's going to pull at the heartstrings of all those Oilers fans out there.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be, what? We have a goaltending prospect? Wait, there was an Oilers goaltending prospect on the team last year. How did that work out? Olivier Waugh, and then who didn't even end up starting for his team in the playoffs.
First things first, Smith-Pelly and Connolly will return to the team. I'm just wondering, these guys are both right-wingers, I believe. Are they going to possibly throw Mark Stone's job security out the window?
That's a good question, because I was thinking about that as soon as they came back, and it didn't occur to me when I saw it at, you know, 2 a.m. Friday morning, how could this affect Mark Stone. I guess my answer is I don't think it affects Mark Stone too much. I believe he probably is going to be a lock for the team. It probably doesn't hurt his chances that he's got a WHL coach in the Vancouver Giants, Don Hay, running the show. And I mean, he's got a lot of people in his corner. He's also a bigger guy, so I mean, if this drops him down to a top nine role instead of top six, he might be able to handle it. I think, you know, as far as right shot wings with an Ottawa connection go, maybe this might make it a little bit harder for Tyler Toffoli from your Ottawa 67s. You know, he didn't make the team last year. I mean, it's a question of, you know, how can he adapt, play a two-way game, or does he have to be on a scoring line to make this team? Of course, he's leading the OHL in goals. Smith-Pelly, I guess he usually does line up right wing, but he kind of plays all three forward spots, and he's definitely a two-way guy, having, you know, played with Dave Cameron in Mississauga. I mean, if he'd played on pretty much any other good OHL team last year, he'd have had 50 goals, but, you know, in Mississauga, it's all about the team coming first, and that sort of knocked him down to somewhere in the 30s. And Connolly, I'll see. I mean, he's definitely got the skill to be the first line right wing for this guy. But I don't think it. But to answer your question, I don't think it puts Mark Stone off the team.
Oh, well, you kind of answered my next question. I was going to ask if it hurts Toffoli's chances.
Okay.
But
I would hope they would take Tyler Toffoli. I mean, obviously, I see him play quite a bit since I'm based in Ottawa, and I mean, even if I'm usually at the games to write about someone on the opposition, you know, you definitely notice that. I mean, and the thing with Toffoli this year, I mean, everyone would say, yeah, well, he led the OHL in goals last year and tied for the scoring title, and, you know, he wasn't even invited to the camp. But this year, I've definitely noticed, instead of getting the goals off the rush and off one-timers, he's starting to, you know, go to the net a lot harder and, you know, finish plays down low. So there's definitely the nature of his offense has been a lot different this year, and I mean, he has been, I think, a bit more responsible defensively. You know, it would be just kind of bizarre if 2 years in a row he leads the OHL in goals and doesn't end up playing for Team Canada.
Yeah.
But stranger things have happened.
I recall a little bit of angst last season around this time when you came on the show and you're a little peeved that he was omitted from the roster.
Yeah, it seemed last year they were other greater hockey minds than I. So, you know, i.e. pretty much everybody who's not on CBC on Saturday night. We're like, did these guys just go out of their way not to take a goal scorer? I mean, you know, they cut Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and, you know, don't even bring Toffoli to camp. There was Ryan House, who was a 50-goal scorer in the WHL. I think almost got 52 years in a row. I think actually has played some NHL games. Do I have that right for the Calgary Flames this year as a 20-year-old? And, you know, he was cut, and I think so was Brandon Peary, who was a, you know, college kid. I think this year they're a lot more predisposed to be able to be a more offensive team. You know, just a matter of putting the pieces together and gelling quickly for a short tournament.
Is there anybody that you've noticed that was omitted from the team that or the selection camp, anyways, that your surprise isn't there?
I didn't have too many surprises. Well, actually, okay, one big surprise was that they didn't give it to Malcolm Subban a shot. You know, PK's younger brother, who's leading the Ontario Hockey League, I think, in goals against average and save percentage, or at least was the last time I checked. The thing with Valco Subban, he had an ankle sprain that sort of limited him, his participation with the Bulls. He didn't get to play those Subway Super Series games. But then you look at me, he's been, just stellar. And talking to a lot of people in the OHL, you watch him play, and it's like you don't even see the bottom 2 feet of the net. He covers up everything so well. And I know he won't turn 18 until, I believe, 5 days before the tournament starts. But, and maybe he's not such a sure thing as any of the four goalies that they brought to camp. Buns, Mark Vizintin, the incumbent, Scott Wedgwood from the Plymouth Whalers, and Louis Domingue from the Quebec Rempart. But I would have just given him a shot to see what he could do. And I know you don't bring people to the camp for the experience. You bring them there because you think you can make the team. But I think he could have made this team. And it's kind of funny because it's the second time in 4 years that the Belleville Bulls have had perhaps the best goaltender in the OHL, and he hasn't even gone to the camp because they're the rookie on Carolina this week who had that unprecedented feat of being the losing goalie in a game where he wasn't scored on in his NHL debut, Mike Murphy.
Yeah,
3 years ago, I think he was CHL Goalie of the Year in Belleville, and they didn't take him for whatever reason. So figure that out. And it's the irony being, of course, the Bulls coach, George Burnett, is one on Team Canada's staff, so I don't know, maybe he didn't push hard for him. But, I would have given Subban a look. I know he's not as experienced as the other guys, but, the skill is just undeniable. He's a physical freak, to put it. There's no other way to put it. Someone was telling me a story a while ago. I think the Bulls were playing the Peterborough Petes. And in Peterborough, there's a bunch of pennants that hang out in the hallways. So all the Bulls players are, just messing around, trying to jump up and touch them. And, of course, none of them, they're like George Costanza trying to touch that awning. And, can't come within, a foot of it. Malcolm Subban jumps up and just slaps the thing with his full palm. So, yeah, he's probably going to be a first-round pick in the June draft. As far as skaters and defensemen go, I didn't have too many surprises. I know there were a lot of people down east who were disappointed that Nathan MacKinnon wasn't invited to the camp, although he's only a 16-year-old.
He'll have his chances.
I wasn't too surprised at that. As far as a Senators pick goes, Matt Pumpel, of course, in the Peterborough Petes. I think people were surprised, but he didn't really have a strong game when he played in the Super Series, and that sort of hurt his chances. Plus, he is only 18, and I think they were looking at him as someone who would have to be in a scoring role. And sometimes when you're at that age, and you're that type of player, you don't get picked. Just stick with Sens prospects, but to us. Hop over the border. Stefan Nason from the Plymouth Whalers, one of the Sens' other first-round picks from last year, didn't get invited to Team USA's camp. So that kind of surprised me, just because I thought he could bring a physical element that they didn't have at the tournament last year.
Just to follow up on that, one person who wasn't obviously invited was Jean-Gabriel Pageau.
He's had the broken hand. So.
Yeah. So
otherwise, I think they would have.
Yeah.
Seriously considered him. Captain, produces, just a leader on that Olympique team.
Yeah, I was curious to see whether or not you thought he was a strong candidate when he actually got hurt in mid-November, but yeah.
I would have definitely looked at it. It's going to be interesting to see how much content there is from over in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. I think only eight players from the queue were picked. Michael Bournival, the Shawinigan captain, is a Habs prospect. He definitely took a good run at it last year. Huberto, if he's healthy, and then there's the two other St. John Sea Dogs. There's Zach Phillips, who he's a possible maybe fourth line type guy. He's great on faceoffs. Nathan Beaulieu, the Habs prospect with the Habs first rounder with the first name, who French last name, who doesn't speak French, unfortunately. He's working on it. He's in there somewhere in the mix, maybe, as that sort of seventh defenseman, second power play unit type guy, maybe. That's where I see him if he's going to make the team.
So I believe Jonathan Huberdeau is not skating today. Do you think he's going to be healthy in time for the tournament?
I think he will be. He broke the foot around, November 5th or so, and it's just a matter of... I think he just needs time to heal and then just sort of get back up to game speed. So it's going to be an interesting guessing game. Do they put him on the roster? Because once the final roster's in, I mean, you have to. You can't make any substitutions once the tournament starts. And you just think Canada last year ended up playing short by the end of the tournament, not because they took someone who did have a, you know, a pre-existing injury, but Jaden Schwartz, I think, ended up breaking his ankle. And they were shy a couple of bodies by the end, so it's going to be a bit of a guessing game there. I think if even if he's 80-85%, you know, you definitely include him, or maybe see how long you can stretch it out before you get down to the final 22. Because I don't believe the rosters have to be in. I mean, it's funny that other countries will play it a lot differently. They won't put their roster into the last minute, but Canada likes to do this big rollout, you know, 10 or 11 days before the tournament, saying this is our team. And do you necessarily have to be married to that? I know it would obviously be devastating if you, you know, didn't pare down the roster to 22 right away and then told someone who, you know, has sacrificed and, you know, worked his heart out and told them, well, you know, you've done great, but, you know, we like Huberto a bit more. And Huberto is, I think, a special talent. I sort of think last night, I mean, you know, this whole thing about him being injured would be such a bigger deal if he played in the OHL. And, you know, but it's kind of like he sort of ends up being off the radar because he plays all the way out in St. John. And, you know, the center of the universe doesn't, you know, pay much attention to a Francophone who plays for a team in the Maritimes. I wish it was different, but that's just the way it is. Like during the Memorial Cup last year, you know, Damian Cox kept writing, oh, there's no marquee player in this tournament. Meanwhile, you've got the kid who ends up going number three in the draft is like the MVP in the tournament.
Getting back to your point about the selection camp being announced, or the roster being announced early, at least it's not like a Miami Heat kind of production where they have the fireworks.
I'm taking my talents to, oh, Northern Alberta. December.
I wanted to talk about another Ottawa narrative that's going into this camp. Cody Ceci, how realistic are his chances of making this roster?
Well, then, you know, bearing in mind I'm not there while this is going on, I'd have to think he'd be able to give it a good shot. But I think he might be more of one of the guys who has a stronger case to make it next year when he's going to be in his age 19 season. I mean, they're not exactly bereft of, you know, offensive defensemen. You know, when you think, you know, Ryan Murphy, Beaulieu, Jerome Gauthier-Leduc from the Rimouski Oceanic, who's a Sabres prospect who's got something like 45 points already in the Quebec League this year. You know, Dougie Hamilton can be an offensive defenseman, the Boston Bruins first-round pick. I mean, I'm not even sure, you know, if Dougie Hamilton's a sure guy to be a top four. Ryan Murray can be a pretty good offensive player, the Everett Silvertips defenseman, who's, I believe, rated by Central Scouting as the top draft prospect in the Western League. So there's a lot of competition for guys who play Cody Ceci's type of game. I mean, and maybe he's not as fully formed in terms of his all-around defensive game as some of the other guys. I think that's going to come around for him eventually. It's just a matter of when. But is it there where it needs to be right now to make this team by, I guess, what, Tuesday? We don't know.
I just hope with CeCe it's a case of, like, he has an opportunity to make the squad and legitimately do it. I know with Tyler Kuma, he was always a bridesmaid, never a bride. So.
Yeah, and I think 1 year. See, one of the guys who ended up getting injured at the camp.
Yeah, in Ottawa, I think.
Yeah, and ended up missing the rest of the year or something like that. That's like just the absolute worst. I mean, to, you know, lay it on the line like that and then be lost to your club team for the rest of the season. Or, you know, hypothetically speaking, I guess.
So if you had to assess what you've seen from the other countries, the United States, Sweden, Russia, what's your general assessment of where Canada's competition is going to come from this year?
Well, the U.S., I think, should be pretty strong. They're going to be an older team. They'll have some firepower up front. I mean, they've got some high draft picks, and they're going to have a fairly big blue line is what everyone sort of keeps saying. So they're definitely going to, I mean, I think it's Canada, U.S. You keep hearing a lot that Finland, a lot of people will forget this from last year, but I believe Finland last year did not lose in regulation time during the round robin, and they, you know, they're still strong. They've got, you know, some high draft picks like, you know, Joel Armia. I think they're maybe a bit of a sleeper team to maybe try to get into a medal game. I'm trying to remember how it all went down last year, but I think they actually led Russia in the quarterfinal, and then Russia came back on them, and then, of course, came back on Sweden, and we'll just forget what happened after that. But and then, obviously, Russia, I mean, is going to have a lot of talent up front, but I think they're going to be a little suspect on the back end in goal. I don't know. They could probably call Rena. They might have to call Rena goalie to.
Isn't that always the case with Russia?
Yeah, well, yeah. Russian goaltending instruction tends to be hit or miss. I mean, they really need to maybe look at how Finland brings goalies along. And of course, Russia's not in Canada's round robin pool. Sweden, I think, is going to have a very talented squad. Obviously, Mika Zibanejad is Sens prospect's going to be in there because. You know, did the Sens ever draft any Swedish players?
No, none.
Yeah, none.
New phenomenon.
Yeah, and you know, they've got so they're definitely going to have. I think it's obviously breaks down Sweden, Russia, trying to come out of the Calgary pool, and then Canada, U.S. Trying to come out of the Edmonton pool. Sweden, I think, will be a tough all around team. I honestly thought they were. One of the better teams there last year, but it was, you know, I guess the big five, so to speak, were so evenly matched last year. It just sort of ended up being a kind of random thing where Russia came in at the end and, you know, swiped away the gold medal.
In years past, we've kind of always looked at Canada's roster and seen a top six of, you know, you have your skill, you have your older players, and then on the bottom two lines, you have your energy guys, the grinding type. It's kind of been defined as like the Canadian wave of progressing through the tournament. And do you think that has a chance of going through this season? Or how do you see the roster actually shaking itself out?
Well, they've pretty much stated that's how they're going to build it. They're always looking to, you know, fit the round peg into the round hole and do the whole top six, bottom six thing, you know, as opposed to the whole, you know, let's just get the best 22 guys and, you know, who want the best 22 players who really want this and... You know, let them sort out who's going to play where. I mean, you keep claiming you have the most depth, you know, of under 20 talent in the country, but they always don't seem to be able to just, you know, let the reins loose. I mean, I think the last guy who really did that was Pat Quinn when the tournament was here, and of course that was the last time Canada won. But you know, they seem to have a concept that they like, and I mean. Until there's a year where there's a real, you know, disaster where they, you know, don't make the final, there's not really going to be that spur to think about, you know, taking a different approach.
It's kind of hard to believe that, like, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a point-per-game player in the NHL right now, and he wasn't good enough to make last year's team.
Yeah, that's kind of surprised me, too.
Well, I don't want to be the revisionist dick, though.
Yeah, I mean, at the time last year, he still had a lot of, growing to do, like physically and probably a bit emotionally too. I mean, I just remember seeing him at the top prospects game in Toronto, which was I guess 3-4 weeks after the World Junior, and it was like, yeah, he looked like a pretty sparsely built guy. Like he just needed to do a lot of growing. And you know, the thing with teenagers is they get older, and apparently in the time between that and the time between, you know, September or October, he was able to, you know, really, build some of that lean muscle that you need to survive in the NHL. But I mean, look at them already. I'm surprised, you know, how well he's doing. I mean, in the summer, it wasn't even clear whether he was going to be able to make the Oilers. I mean, there were people, but at the same time, he didn't have really that much left to learn in junior hockey other than, you know, maybe the fact he would be mentoring a lot of younger players in Red Deer, but it wasn't like he was going to be going back to a powerhouse team either, like Huberto is in St. John, because Red Deer right now, they're a team that's, you know, leaking oil pretty badly in their conference out in the WHL. So, but yeah, it is, you know, you look back at it, it's like, wow, they didn't take him, and they were, and what, by the end of the tournament, what they really were starved for was some offensive creativity.
Tough break for Canada boy Ryan Spooner. Do you think he had a shot at making the team? Had he stayed healthy?
Before Connolly and Smith-Pelly came back, I think he was definitely in the mix to be there as a, you know, sort of a penalty killer and maybe someone who could chip in some secondary scoring. But there were others saying that he is definitely a very talented player, but was there a role there for him? I mean, there's always somebody like that who comes in and you're saying, wow, he's, that guy can really play, but he can't play top, he can't be a frontline guy, and there's just maybe just not a spot for him. But I mean, he's really come a long way in the last, I would say, year or so. I mean, maybe he was one of those guys who slipping down to the second round of the draft, as he did with the Bruins in 2010, was a real sort of wake-up call to him. And then last year, he sort of went through the whole thing, asking Peterborough for a trade and going to a kind of a, I think, a messed up, dysfunctional Kingston Frontenacs team. And this year, Kingston's obviously rebuilding, new coach, a lot of new faces in the lineup, and he's just really matured and as sort of the older veteran on that team, and he's put them on. I mean, the only reason that team has seven wins is, well, not the only reason, but the main reason that they have seven wins and aren't completely in the league basement is because of Ryan Spooner. So for him to come down with mononucleosis is definitely just an unfortunate twist for him. But yeah, I think he could have made the team, but I think he was no more than a bubble player going in.
Last question for you before we let you go. Considering the number of injuries that have happened or that have happened to the projected top 10 players in this year's draft, how do you see it shaking out come June?
That's a good question. You're talking about like Neil Yakupov and
Galchenyuk, yeah.
Missed 7 weeks. Alex Galchenyuk. I don't see Galchenyuk dropping past about 15th overall. I mean, the thing is, NHL teams, they'll do their due diligence and they'll know enough to know that, it doesn't make a big difference. I mean, we were talking about Brett Connolly. Obviously, he had that hip injury during his draft year and maybe took him from being a possible number one pick to going number six, but he still, still went number six, even though I think he only played 16 games that year in the Western League. Phoenix still took Connor Murphy in the first round in June, even though he barely played at all during his draft year due to, I think it was a back problem. So I don't think it's going to affect too many guys, going to drop too many guys down too far. But obviously, it's going to create opportunities for the guys who stay healthy. Someone like Mikhail Gregorenko with the Quebec Remparts. I mean, he's been able to stay healthy so far. I think it's going to give him a chance to build a case that he might indeed be more deserving of going number one than Yakupov. I think Yakupov's got a lot more drive and just is a lot more consistent among of those two players. But Gregorenko, as longer he stays in the lineup, the more highlights he's going to keep keeping up. I mean, the more that that there is a chance for him to build a consensus, because these things, they always kind of go. There's sort of a groupthink phenomenon with the draft. Everyone will start saying, "Well, this guy's better," and people are like, "Oh, really? Well, okay, maybe I've been going about this the wrong way." And suddenly, the sands start to shift, and people get influenced by that.
That's the whole Sean Couturier phenomenon.
Yeah, and there he is. I mean, he drops all the way down to number eight, but he's able to make the NHL. Although, who gets to the NHL the fastest obviously doesn't.
Yeah.
Say who's the best player.
Yep. No. Fair point. Well, Nate, thank you for coming on the show on this Sunday afternoon.
Thanks, Preach.
Before you go, do you have anything coming up on Yahoo that you want to plug?
Oh, well, we're going to be, fully on during the World Junior, obviously, ca.sports.yahoo.com /juniorhockey. Got to find a way to shorten that URL, but we're going to be doing a live chat, I think, of every Team Canada game starting on the 26th, and probably do some of the medal round games as well. So going to be fun, come one, come all.
Fantastic stuff. Well, hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you again before the tournament starts and the roster is actually selected. So, Nate, thanks again for coming on the show, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yeah, great, guys. Look forward to talking again.
Preach,
wrap it up with the conclusion. Are you ready?
I'm pumped. Here we go.
Awesome. So this morning in the Ottawa Sun, Bruce Garriott writes, Chris Kelly might not be able to get that contract that he wants with the Boston Bruins because of the number of signings that they've had go through, like Krejci. Is that a guy who you would kick the can on bringing back to Ottawa?
I'd love him. I think, like, I love Chris Kelly. One of my, he's probably my favorite Sen that got sent out last year. But what's he going to be like? He's going to be your third line center. I think they have enough guys like that. They have Zach Smith, Dogovins, Condra,
Foligno.
They have too many guys.
Zibanejad. Winchester's a UFA, though. He might not be back at all. Same with Konopka.
Did I say Konopka? I don't think I said
no,
Konopka.
No. That was, well done. Yeah. It was sneaky.
No, I wasn't bringing that
he
up.
He is having a hell of a good year, though, in Boston.
Oh, what's 10 goals or 11? He scored last night.
He was on pace for 40 last time I actually crunched the numbers.
He's wearing the A, too.
Yeah.
He's Irish.
Yeah.
He's in Boston. They love him.
Yeah.
He doesn't look Irish.
I don't necessarily know that he's a good fit in Ottawa right now, though.
I would say no.
Because you figure you would have to overpay to bring that guy back.
I think he'd want to come back. I could see him wanting to come back. Didn't he say that when he left? He was thinking about
I don't remember these things. As soon as he was gone, I was just thinking of draft picks.
Second rounder for Kelly. I thought that was great at the time.
Yeah, no, it worked out really well, obviously, for both organizations. But, yeah, I thought 2.2 was kind of a fair number for him last time he was around. So even though the salary cap has gone up and inflation will account for a large
and if he's a 30 goal scorer this year.
Yeah, but do you buy that, though?
He's playing. That's a good team. Like, he's on the third line with what? Peverle and whoever? Marchand, whoever they want to throw in there?
Yep.
It's pretty sick.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I like Chris Kelly a lot. I don't see a fit right now. Unless, as you said, Winchester doesn't re-sign to get rid of a few guys, but nah.
But this Chris Kelly points discussion leads us into, are you buying it or not? So here it is. I'm just going to throw out guys' names, sure. And you give it to me.
Oh, no.
All right?
There's a lot of those this year.
Nicky Foligno, second line center. Are you buying it
no,
or not?
Not buying second line center. Like his game, though.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because I tweeted a couple days ago, and I said, not buying Nick Foligno as a second line center. And I got hammered by tweets saying, oh, he's great. His game's changed.
I don't think we have to go into detail about some of the responses.
It reminded me of that 5-game sample size from the preseason in 2010 where he had three ridiculous highlight reel goals and everybody was filleting.
He could go on and on. Kegarota of whatever.
He's playing well. Like, in fairness to me, I just said, great third line player, buying him as a second
line player. Although, if you get Spets and McCulloch and whoever on the top line, and then you have, if Regan comes back real strong and healthy with Alfie in the second line, I'd take Nick Foligno as a second line left winger.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
The way he's playing right now, I don't know if I was oblivious to this or what, but did he always play like pesty and like an agitator and stuff? Or is this a new thing? I never noticed that from Nick Foligno. Sidney Crosby made the comment he's that type of player when they played a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
I've never noticed this before.
And then Brian Murray comes out shortly thereafter. I wish he was that kind of player.
Me too. But seriously, was he this player before?
He was sort of physical. Maybe not. He wasn't throwing the body around quite like he is now. Maybe he's borrowing a page from Zach Smith's books where he's seeing how effective his style is. And it's working out. And I think he's slowly developing into one of Paul McLean's favorites, right? At this point.
Who's next? What's the next?
Zach Smith. Are you buying it?
I'm buying Zach Smith.
Yeah.
Guys must hate Zach Smith.
Oh, he's a shit. Oh, man. He's a giant shit on the ice.
And he fights. I wouldn't say he's the best fighter, but he'll ask Nathan Horton if he's an all right fighter.
Yeah, exactly.
Does his job. What does he have, 7 goals?
I believe he has 8.
8?
I think he's close to 15 or 16 points.
Love Zach Smith.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. Third line center. Would never have had this opportunity if Chris Kelly was still here.
There you go.
All right, Milan McCulloch. 40 goal pace. Buying it or not?
I wouldn't put him up there with like the elite snipers. Like if you're like, oh, leading goal scorer in the league, I wouldn't say I'm buying that. As far as let's pick some snipers out because there's plenty of guys I'd pick above him. But he's healthy. He's never been healthy before.
He is very adept at knowing exactly where he should be on the ice at all times.
He finds seams.
No, absolutely. Like, that guy knows exactly where he has to be at every situation. That guy will be in front of the net, crashing on a rebound. He'll be out there for deflections, and then he's always the first one back on the back check. It's unbelievable.
How many breakaways or partial breakaways has he had in the last five games?
Quite a few.
He just finds seams. Spezza obviously is an elite passer.
Oh, and his speed helps, right? Speed to burn. And
he's never been healthy.
No.
Every year.
No.
What's his career high? Like 65 games played, something like that?
Yeah, I think he might have broken 70 at one point before he started having the knee problems. But, yeah.
To answer your question, I'm going to go with buying it. Buying it that he's a goal scorer and he's going to continue to put up at least 30 because he's never broken 30.
No. See, and that's where I would probably put his ceiling at.
Yeah.
And no, but he's a very effective two-way player. You need a guy like that on your top two lines.
Oh, he's definitely a top six. And
The injury bug scares me a little bit, but what can you do?
Not as much as a Regan injury bug.
Craig Anderson. Are you
buying
him
as
an average goalie right now?
Oh, buying as an average goalie? Sure.
Yeah?
You?
I don't know what to make of him, man. For the first 10 games, I was thinking, all right, now obviously Ottawa's not really helping him out here. He's been hung out to dry on a number of occasions, and you know like his numbers will revert back to the mean at some point. And I think we're finally starting to see that now where his numbers are getting a little bit better. But there are still, like, I hate harping on goaltenders because everybody else in the city seems to do it, but his play hasn't really impressed me that much.
Same. I'd be in the same boot, but you said, am I buying that he's an average goaltender? I'd put him in, like, the top 2015 range.
Yeah.
He's all right. He's not a goalie of the future.
Three more years, baby.
I'm assuming Mr. Leonard will be backing up next year and then maybe getting quite a few starts the following year. I don't think they should bring back Alex Auld.
Philip Kuba. Buying or selling?
I'm buying. He's keeping it simple. He's not, everyone harps on him for not being like a physical presence because of how big he is, but he's never been that player, so stop talking about that.
Yeah, I saw him recently. It was probably 3 weeks ago. I saw him out, and I was blown away by how big he is. Like, just physically, like, he's
big,
a big 6'4" guy. Okay, I can sort of buy what Don Brennan's been saying in the papers. Like, how does this guy not hit anybody? Like, you see this guy in person. Damn, that's a big dude.
It's not his game. Does Danny Heatley hit anybody? Joe Thornton?
No, but he is effective with his positioning. Active stick. Gets in the way of a lot of passing lanes.
Obviously, him
strong.
And Carlson have a presence.
Moves the puck relatively well. Him and Carlson look comfortable. Trade bait. I think that guy's trade value will be probably relatively decent.
Especially all the
good
teams that are hurting right now.
Absolutely. Like, I just don't understand why there wouldn't be a market for this guy's services come, I don't even know when the trade deadline is this year. Late February?
It's in February. Yeah.
Anyways, Sergei Gonchar, buying or selling?
What am I buying?
What are you selling him for at this point? Do you think this is what we should come to expect from Sergei Gonchar, or was last year just a bit of an aberration at first?
Clearly last year, the whole team played as bad as anybody could. He wasn't going to be as bad as he was last year.
And he was coming off a knee problem, wasn't he, at the beginning of last season?
Well, he played.
I think he played 50 or 60 games the season before, didn't he?
And he was there in the elimination game against Montreal, because remember, he got ripped for letting Travis Mullen go by him. So he clearly finished the
deservedly
season.
Yeah.
God, that was bad. I don't know. He's okay. He's not as bad as he was last year. He's all right. He definitely, I'll put it this way, they miss him not being in the lineup for sure.
Fair point. Is there anybody else that you want to bring up? That's all I had.
We sticking with the Sens or anybody?
Sure. Well, we can go league-wide if you want to expand it.
Are you buying the Minnesota Wild?
Oh, God, no. God, no. I think they're
27-3.
Yeah, I think their overtime records is a little bit ridiculous. But they're winning it with heart, grit, soul, leadership, all that other stuff that's, you know.
What about Florida as a playoff team? Now, they lead the division right now, and I'm not saying they're going to finish top three.
I think they're helped by that market. And like, you're playing in the Southeast Division against Winnipeg, which isn't necessarily the strongest team in the world. Pavlik's actually just starting to play well, so they've been pretty bad to this point. Washington, I think everyone will agree, has been terrible to this point. They started off really, really strong, but over the last month and a half, they've been terrible. Tampa Bay, bottom of the conference.
I'd say they make the playoffs.
Oh, I think at this point they have to, unless
Washington,
unless Montreal, Washington start playing well, which I think they will.
Washington will catch them. I think they're 6 points out of it, and they have too much talent. They have better coaching now. I think they'll catch Florida, but I think Florida makes the playoffs.
What about Thomas Caberle?
Thomas Caberle, not buying.
Three more seasons of that guy.
Everyone's all pumped up because he got 2 assists in his debut. He was still... I didn't watch the game, so I can't see... I can't say if he was liability defensively. I don't know if he had any miscues back there. He got 2 secondary assists.
Did you happen to see... Do you follow Chris Nyland on Twitter?
Yes. Knuckles?
Yes. Knuckles Nyland?
Yeah.
Did you happen to see his tweet that says, oh, maybe Montreal could get Brian McCabe and reunite that line? I'm just... In my head, I'm just like, yes! Yes, do it! Do it, Pierre Gauthier. I want to see that. That would be the worst pairing in the NHL.
Oh, God.
Oh, the defensive liabilities on the ice.
What's Brian McCabe's deal?
He's UFA.
No, what's his deal, though? Why hasn't he chosen to sign with somebody? Is he think he's too good
I
for
guess
these
he's
offers
not
he's
not
getting?
Getting the money that he wants.
So what?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. But, I mean, that happened in baseball. Last year, there was, like, Jermaine Dye sat out the whole season thinking he's going to get his payday. He refused to play for less than he thought he was worth, and now he's out of baseball. Nobody wants him. So... That kind of stuff happens all the time, man. You get those egos.
Whatever.
Anything else?
Dallas. Nah.
St. Louis. Ken Hitchcock.
I'm buying
Give him the Jack Adams.
It's a system.
Yeah.
They have a nice forward core.
Yeah, and Chris Stewart's not even playing well.
Yeah.
Which is scary.
Steve Cooley has tweeted at the beginning of the season. Kessel. Yep. Or Stewart. I replied Stewart because of what else he brings. I changed my answer now.
Sweet. Everybody, thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me, man.
The show, man. Naysager, thank you for coming on the show on short notice. And yeah, that's a wrap.
Good stuff. How can you not get pumped up talking about World Juniors?
Yeah, no, it's a buzz, man.
Want
it's
some
a buzz.
Goosebumps?
Yeah, for sure.
Watch that Eberle tying goal against Russia.
Oh, yeah, that was fantastic. But you knew as soon as that Russian player iced the puck, you knew it was karma.
I was at the game. Karma, the two people I was beside, I was with Sean and Augie, who were both there last night. I said, watch this. I'm like, we're going to score. Yep. Like this selfish guy goes for the empty net. We're coming back.
There you go. Anyways, thanks everyone for listening. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week. Cheers.